Welcome to the R Word Podcast.
I'm Dustin.
I'm Lowell.
And we are here to discuss reparations in the church. I'm still not who I'm meant to be. I'm holding back.
I just relax, indulge in insecurities. Hey friends, Lowell Taylor. This month's episode is a live episode that we recorded at St. Paul's Church in Fayetteville. You'll hear I called folks from St. Paul's to repent, repair, and be healed, and then folks from St. Paul's Becoming Beloved Community Group responded to the call in a panel format. Panelists were Alan Carney, Jim Norris, Susie Norris, Glenn Siegel, David McMath, and Gwen Gertz. So we hope you enjoy this month's live recording at St. Paul's Church in Fayetteville. Thanks.
Morning, everyone. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We are so glad that you are here, and we are so glad to have our guest, Lowell Taylor. I met Lowell when somebody was talking about reparations, talking about building up community, talking about the relationship of white churches to the black community, and this guy has a lot of thoughts. But not only thoughts, but actions. And so when we think about how our faith intersects with how we live our lives and what we actually do to be the hands and feet of Jesus in community, I think that you're going to be inspired by today's conversations, not only from Lowell's experiences, but also from the experiences of folks who've been in our Becoming Beloved community group for a while and have been walking the walk for more than a minute. So thank you all for being here, but let's give Lowell a welcome.
Thank you, Sarah. Can everybody hear me okay? Is it okay if I pray? Can I do that? Okay. God, thank you that you have told us what is good for us and what you want from us. You told us to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with you. Will you please help us to be who you want us to be, to do what you want us to do? We need your help. We ask for it today. And all God's people said?
Amen.
Amen. Okay. Our panelists, if you all will come up for our panel discussion. These are folks who are a part of your BBC group, Becoming Beloved Community, and as Sarah said, have been walking the walk for more than a minute. They've been friends to me over the last year or two, and I'm really thankful for them. So I'm gonna ask them, as they want to, sort of popcorn style, to answer three questions, and those questions or a version of them are on your tables. Some of you, if you didn't receive a handout, I'll apologize. The questions for these folks are, what is the relationship between who you are as a person, as a family, as a church, however you want to answer it, the relationship between who you are and what the Zacchaeus Foundation is doing? The second question is, this may be a little bit different for some of us than others, but either why would it be hard or why was it hard to work with the Zacchaeus Foundation by educating ourselves and by investing? And then finally, how would you overcome those hardships or how have you overcome those hardships? So depending on where we are on our journeys, we may answer these questions sort of in the past tense as things that we have overcome, or maybe in sort of the present progressive tense, things that we maybe are wrestling with to overcome. So after our panelists answer the questions, we're gonna have time in our small groups at our tables for you all to reflect on these questions, and then finally to share your reflections, if you're willing, with a large group. So I want you to start thinking about these questions as our friends answer them. So I'll just release it to you guys. You can take this however you want, if you want to just take the first question and then the second and the third, or just kind of bounce back and forth. But thank you all for sharing.
I'll go first. Yeah, I think we share a similar vision. Every week we come to this church and we hear the message that God loves compassion, calls us to love our neighbor, and to stand up for justice. And every week we keep coming back to hear more. So I think this is who we are as Episcopalians. And I see the Zacchaeus Foundation as a way for us to join this movement of people who are working towards racial healing and repair.
Thank you, Jim. And if you will say your name for the recording, yeah.
Hi, I'm Gwen. And first, I can't resist talking about my reparations. Sorry. But I want to talk about a little bit about my relationship to the Zacchaeus Foundation, and I'll try to be brief. I think probably since I was 10 years old, I knew that there was something wrong in this country. Just going from Oak Park, which is a western suburb, into Chicago for my ballet lessons, I would have to go through Cabrini Green, and that's the first time I saw what I've heard it described as hyper-segregation. And I knew something was wrong. I didn't have words like systemic racism. It seemed like wherever I went in my life, whether I was in school learning, whether I was at the workplace and would see lots of microaggressions without, again, knowing that vocabulary, but I could go on and on. But I knew at a very early age that something was wrong, and it took me a long time to understand that my whiteness, which is how I identify myself, was predicated on 400 years ago slavery and the need to have black folks and white folks. So, you know, racism, it's just been there all the time. And I can't remember how I first got connected with Zacchaeus, but I think sometimes when you need something, it comes along. And I've been talking about racism for such a long time and feel like I'm just talking and not doing anything. So for me, joining this group was an absolute relief because I could actually do something. I think it's a two-step. The first step is just being aware of what America is. And if you don't have that, then you can't really do reparations or whatever the activity is. So it's a constant back and forth.
I'm Glenn Siegel, and I'm going to speak about who I am and how that is connected to the Zacchaeus Foundation and my interest in it. For me, this is a journey of personal healing. Having grown up in a Jim Crow era of Arkansas, being cared for by a black woman in my own home who was not allowed to ride in our car or eat dinner with our family, I knew early something was deeply wrong. My parents could entrust me to her care, but could not allow her to eat a meal with us. And what that did is set up a separation in me, a separation where I had to wall off an awareness while still participating in my life. And I really am disturbed by that being created in me at such an early age. So this journey for me is to create a sense of integrity in myself. I don't want to continue living knowing there's a part of me that's complicit with something that's deeply wrong, and I couldn't be a whole person and continue to do that. So reparations and the Zacchaeus Foundation gives me an avenue for actually my own healing beyond the importance of contribution to the country as a whole.
My name is Dave McMath. So this is going to be a little complicated. The Zacchaeus Foundation, so in the reparations book by Quanah Thompson that some of us studied last summer, they discuss reparations as restoring three things: truth, wealth, and power. And I think at St. Paul's we do a decent job of handling the truth part. If you want to learn more about inequality, about white supremacy in society, you can come join the BBC, you can go to our Sacred Ground classes. There's opportunities for that sort of stuff. In 2020, I think, Sarah, when she was still at All Saints, hosted an event to discuss racial issues, and toward the end of it, one of the questions that came up is, how do you feel about reparations? And in 2020, I thought, this is completely impractical. There's no way that we can actually, as a society, engage in reparations in a meaningful way. And then I learned about the Zacchaeus Foundation, and I said, this makes total sense. This is an actionable approach toward the, I had the language by then, to the wealth and power side of the equation. The truth side's hard, but solvable, but the wealth and power is much more difficult. And I think the Zacchaeus Foundation is the first example of an organization that has had what it feels like a reasonable, actionable approach to that. So that's my involvement.
My name is Susie Norris, and I'll just concur with everything you've heard so far, and then I'll just add one piece of how my faith has been impacted by this work. And when we say our baptismal covenant, our promise to God, I realized I was moved by that. And why am I moved by that? Because, in particular, will you strive for justice and peace among all people and respect the dignity of every human being? And I believe that, but how can I do it? And the Zacchaeus Foundation offers a way to do that.
I'm Alan Carney, and the way I'm connected to the Zacchaeus Foundation is as a contributor. But like everybody else here, when everything was made known to me about the Zacchaeus Foundation, it struck me hard that this was the way to go forward, and it involves two separate pieces. One is the reconciliation, and one is the reparations. So my heart is in both of those, and the part about returning what is stolen hits me so hard that, because if you think about the truth being stolen, I mean, we have a perfect example of that in Florida. With, you know, the education system, you cannot teach anything that has to do with race or racism, anything like that. And, of course, that's being spread across the U.S. So that is the theft of information. The theft of wealth stems from 400 years of white people putting their thumb down on black people. They are still trying to rise. So this is our way to give back and help with that.
Question two is, what would be hard about working with the Zacchaeus Foundation? And I think this work is, there's a lot of misunderstanding about this work. I think until recently I was a reparation skeptic. I didn't think the country was ready. I didn't think I had personally harmed anybody. But then when I stopped to listen, I changed my mind. I realized that the advantages I have in this life are directly connected to this history of harm. And I benefit from it. It's a personal level. And so I think, standing up for justice and repairing relationships has become important. Just like we teach our children, when you hurt someone, you first say you're sorry, and then what can I do to make it right?
I think what could make the work hard, or the previous me, what would have made the work hard is that reparations is too big, and I never owned slaves. How does this affect me? And it's through, well, that's the third question, so I'm not going to answer the third one, but that's my answer. This doesn't apply to me. I'm a good white person. I never had slaves.
I think for me, I early on just didn't want to let in the idea of reparations because I knew that it was too big. It seemed too big and almost futile to try to approach it. And then I start to reflect, and the more I heard, the more I faced the truth of theft as the foundational reason, the easier it became for me to want to be involved in this work. You know, just on my own spiritual journey, I'm aware that blindness is what I cultivate to stay away from challenges that will be painful for me. So I keep myself small and narrow. But for my own spiritual growth, I really have to start letting in the bigger picture of truth if I'm going to expand on my own journey. And so part of this was an ego way of protecting myself from having to face something bigger. But my spiritual journey requires it of me.
And I was just thinking about, I think it's been about 4 years ago, but Ta-Nehisi Coates, who's a wonderful black author, you might want to read him, he wrote Between the World and Me. He wrote a really excellent article in The Atlantic about why we should do reparations. And if you ever get a chance, read it. But I remember when I read it 4 years ago, I thought, well, obviously we should, but it just seemed too big. So, I mean, that was my thought, and then I kind of dismissed it. And then I was amazed when I found out about Evanston and here that people are really doing it. And my last comment, just something I was rereading James Baldwin's The Fire Next Time. You can tell I'm an ex-academic because I always have to refer to other people. But he says something interesting. He isn't talking specifically about reparations, but he says white people have trouble giving up anything. And he says, and I think this is really interesting, because when you give something up, you're also giving up a little bit of your identity. And I don't think that joining reparations means I no longer have to be a white oppressor, but I think it does sort of mess with my idea of who I am. And so I just wanted to add that.
Yeah, I'm glad you put it that way. I think Zacchaeus is, so we're talking about sort of potential difficulty. How could it be difficult to work with this foundation? Zacchaeus Foundation's model is pretty radical. They're taking money from white people and giving it to black people and just giving it to them. But think about that. So I listened to Our Word podcast yesterday to study for this, and one of the quotations that came up is, the metaphors that came up, if I have stolen your car and you want your car back, me making sure that you are a good driver is not a good reason for me to not give you your car back. It's your car. And I love that. I think it was in the reparations book, or at least Lowell quoted it from the reparations book, and I misquoted it. But it's a radical idea that I think has taken me some time to get my head around, but it's important.
I could just say ditto to everything that's been said, but one of the things that did strike me is this reparations being so big, you know, it's just too big for me to even, you know, consider anything about. And then when I met Lowell and heard about the Zacchaeus Foundation and the fact that this is local, you know, this is local. And so what better place to try to make an impact than with your friends and your neighbors and your families, you know, that are here. You know, then it becomes much more, the size becomes more able to handle. And so I think, you know, even like the number of people that are here today, I mean, you just think about if each one of us went out and talked to our neighbors or our families about what we heard and, you know, what a good plan this is, you know, then you start everything to blossom.
Well, question three is, what can we do to overcome these difficulties? And I think a lot of that's been already said. I think, you know, returning wealth is one thing, but returning truth and power is really vital. And I think, you know, educating ourselves is really key. And once you realize where you're at, it becomes, you know, part of our faith journey. This is what we need to do. So I would encourage you all to look into sacred ground or becoming beloved community, where we do inner work and learn about our past and where do we go from here.
I think on this journey of learning the truth, that was really impactful. So education is a way to overcome those obstacles. But I think the other piece is reading reparations and listening to the R Word podcast, really understanding in my depths that there's been a theft of truth, wealth, and power. That was really profound for me. And recognizing that there's a way to return that. And as Jim said, you know, the wealth seems really overwhelming and big, but then returning truth, that's something we can do. Like, that's doable, that's actionable. And returning power. I feel like, and the Zacchaeus Foundation provides an avenue for all of those things.
I just want to add about returning truth, that it's about returning truth to ourselves. We don't know many things. I didn't know about Tulsa until not that long ago. These are major events in this country that we have kept ourselves blind to. That does not help us. I mean, this is not just about helping people of color. This is about returning our humanity to ourselves.
I just want to add to that. I think one interesting way to look at white racism in this country is through what I'll call a medical model. And I think, Glenn, you've been talking about that a little bit, that as white people, we've got a disease, the disease of racism, because once you dehumanize another, you are also, of course, dehumanizing yourself. So if we can think of it in medical terms, that we have a disease that we're trying to recover from, because, as Glenn again said so eloquently, part of the work is, yes, doing things like reparations, but part of the work is also within ourselves. One final thing. this maybe goes back to two, but up till 6 years ago, I was teaching at the university, and I became very aware that there is a whole group of undergraduate students who have very little knowledge about race in America. And this is before the LEARNS Act, so I think some of the education we have to do is vital. And I think I did it wrong. I did teach what was actually going on, and I got a lot of resistance. And I did not handle it with love. I handled it with anger and frustration. So I think if I was to do things again, I would try to understand how threatening this is to each white individual's identity, and maybe try to figure out how to do it with more love.
I just want to make a comment about the structure of the Zacchaeus Foundation, because that, to me, was a real convincing thing to see this. As I mentioned, reparations was just too big for me to get my head around. But the fact that it would be white people wanting reconciliation and wanting to do the repair work by investing in this fund, and then rather than us trying to be the white saviors of saying, oh, well, we're going to put this money here, we're going to put that money there, we have some very reputable people on the board who are black. And they are the ones who would say, yes, okay, you know, we've had this much money as a return on the investment, and these nonprofits that are black-led are the ones that are doing the good in the community, and they need to be funded more, or new ones need to be started. And that was just my convincing attitude that this was the way to go.
Thank you all for sharing your perspective with us. Here's what I want to ask you all, if you will, to do with about the next 10 minutes of our time, okay? Let's spend 5 minutes at our tables answering those three questions. And again, you can answer it as an individual, as a family, as a church family. Hey, what's the relationship between who I am, who we are, and what the Zacchaeus Foundation is doing? Why would it be hard to work together, educating and investing, and how could we, if we wanted to, how could we overcome those hardships? So we'll spend 5 minutes doing that, and then we'll spend our last 5 minutes together. Anybody who wants to share something you discussed in your small group, you'll have an opportunity to share that with a large group. But let's break 5 minutes for small group discussion, and then I'll let y'all know when that time is up, and we'll do 5 minutes of large group discussion, okay? Thanks. You're listening to The R Word. We'll be right back after this.
I'm Denisha Simpson.
And I'm Joy McGowan.
And we are the co-host to the Resilient Black Women podcast. Our podcast is all about demystifying mental health for Black women, women of color, and women everywhere.
You can learn more about our work by visiting resilientblackwomen.org.
You can also listen to our podcast at KUAF.com or subscribe to our podcast on any streaming platform.
KUAF is your source for local, national, and international news. It's how you keep up with the latest from area nonprofits. And it's all possible because of listeners just like you. If you're a sustaining member of KUAF, thank you for keeping this resource available to our community. And if you'd like to join the hundreds of other sustaining members who make KUAF possible, it's simple. Just head over to supportkuaf.com. And thanks.
You're listening to The R Word. All right, friends. Our time is up. I'm sorry to interrupt your good conversations in small groups, but I do want to get you out of here on time. So let's see. We've got two microphones. So for the next 5 minutes or so, thank you, Jim, here's what we'll do. Anybody who has anything they want to share from their small group discussion, now's the time to do it. Please do use the microphone to share what you discussed, your answers to any of these three questions. With that, I'm going to pick on my table and ask Mac to share something that was discussed.
Thanks, Lowell. We talked about some of the difficulties and went back to your analogy of making sure that the person's car we stole is a good driver. The idea of giving up control and not holding people who are our creditors accountable is a tough one. And the answer that I heard that was spoke to me was, you have to get involved. If you want to know how the money's being spent, go out and volunteer, and that'll change your heart.
Thank you, Mac. Okay, who's next? Raise your hand, be brave. All right, this front table, Jim, you got it?
5 minutes is not a lot of time to discuss this. kind of reiterating Mac's comment was that power is the most difficult thing. I mean, I think wealth is an indication of the power that you hold, so it's a good place to start. But power is very difficult to convince someone they need to give up. We're, you know, regardless, white, black, indigenous, whatever, we're in a paternalistic society and where people, even with good hearts, want to take care. And I think that's a very difficult thing to convince people to give up. It's a hard thing in your own personal life. Look at all of the families with adolescents and how easy it is for the parents to give up power to those adolescents turning into adults. So anyway.
Thank you. Who's next?
Yeah, Alan, Julie, and I, you know, we just talked about, you know, how black people are involved in the decision-making. Because I think the question just after you, your introduction to the extent to which, from a governance perspective, you know, black people on the board, I think it'd be kind of easy. I don't think there's probably any disagreement in this room around reparations, but it's not something that one person does to someone else because it solves one's guilt. And so the extent to which the right thing is done, but in the right way, and the right people are involved, you know, it's the optics around that are complex. And I think there's probably still more to be done as well. I mean, no doubt, you know, there needs to be the right leadership, but it also needs to be grounded deeply in people and communities that are receiving then the reparations in a way that feels dignified, because we've come from a place where there's a lack of dignity, and where there's an imbalance of power, and so the extent to which then we're not repeating that through reactions which in fact are grounded in the right things, but they might not be being done in the right way, I think is important.
Thank you. Thank you. Who else?
Yeah, so I was just responding to why someone might be resistant and just reflecting on my own history. Growing up in a family that benefited from being Southern, white, within the power structure, you know, having ancestors who were owning part of the plantation system, and being taught that that was something to be, you know, a heritage to be proud about, and being steeped in this. And when Chester Johnson came and talked at our Tippi McMichael lecture series on his book, Damaged Heritage, where he shared his own experience of coming to terms with the fact that his beloved grandfather was a perpetrator in the Elaine race massacre, and pairing up with a woman whose grandfather was killed in it, whose black grandfather was killed in it, and them sharing this story of discovery, that, I mean, the door for me had been opening before that, but that really gave me a way to kind of reframe how I looked at my own past and to begin to see it more truthfully and to want to see it truthfully and to be open to reading books that explore that history and how we've gotten where we are. So that's me having empathy for some people in their resistance.
Thank you. Well, I'm sorry to say we're out of time for now, but I do hope to continue the conversation with you all later. And I'm really thankful, I just want to say this in closing, for you all as a parish, as a community, because I know that this conversation will continue as we all seek to be faithful. So thank you all for including me here today. I appreciate y'all. Thanks for listening to today's episode.
Subscribe to the R Word wherever you get podcasts.
And learn more about the R Word podcast, the R Word events, and the Zacchaeus Foundation on our website, thezacchaeusfoundation.org. In the prejudice is automatic. I take advantage being born into my demographic. But what's a blessing when it generates a struggle of a color for the privilege of another rapper?